Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. We have an extended episode that you'll hear that Keith and I recorded after the intro music shortly, which gets into a variety of topics: the West Coast trip overview, Parker versus Portis, Zach LaVine's state of mind, Chris Dunn, potential free agents for next year, top prospects in the NBA. So that we get into all those topics in a subsequent section after you hear this. But I did want to do a quick addendum to that show and discuss the news that Carmelo Anthony is joining the beloved Bull. Keith, have you ever seen a more ridiculous reaction on Twitter to the news? Or is this more commonplace?
I think I did about a week ago when we got Michael Carter Williams in the same fashion.
That's right. It amazes me that people actually think that we are trying to acquire Melo to, I guess, win games, you know, and just the general outrage about it. Just everything they do, no matter what, is going to be viewed negatively. And I kind of realized this season, too, I think they keep on losing games. Obviously, people are reacting negatively to them losing games. Even if they start winning, I think their reaction will be negative. They're in a no-win situation at this point.
Oh, no, you're dead on. We saw it with the Cleveland game. Going into the Cavs game, it was a must-win. The Bulls are on a 10-game losing streak. If they lose to this pitiful team with these injuries, it'll be the biggest embarrassment in franchise history. You go in the game, you play with pace, you shoot 50% from three-point land on 15 of 30 attempts, you win the game in a blowout fashion, in clean fashion. You got to put your reserves in to finish the game and still win by 16 points. And then after the game, well, the Bulls just don't even know how to tank right. We did this last year. Here we go again.
Here we go. I know. It was hilarious. Just hilarious to see the general reaction. And like we don't have any injuries. Like Wendell Carter Jr. is not still hurt. And, you know, and Denzel Valentine hasn't been our best 3-point shooter last year has been out the whole season. It's like, I'm sorry. I don't want to hear you guys complain about injuries. You know, give me a break. It's such a joke. But that said, you know, what are you going to do? They won. They beat a much inferior team, and you know, hopefully it won't cost them too much with the changes to the rules. But let's get a little bit into the move specifically around Carmelo Anthony. If you could just explain what that move was for.
Essentially, the Rockets are a luxury tax team, meaning that they are over the standard cap amount, and they pay extra money on top of the dollars that they're already paying the players in luxury tax. So when they go to remove a player from their roster to waive them, they have to pay them extra money on the dollar just to cut them from their team. So for a team like the Bulls, who has an open roster spot that was created in the holiday trade because we were taking two players back instead of one, so we waived campaign. And then after we waived campaign, though we didn't intend on taking the second player from the Grizzlies and Marshawn Brooks, he was waived shortly thereafter. So the Bulls still had an open roster spot, which they took Michael Carter Williams on in exchange for a heavily protected, never to convey second round pick in cash, because the Rockets can pay the Bulls less money while still giving them extra cash for doing the favor for them than it would cost them to just waive the player on their own while being in the luxury tax. They did the same thing with Melo yesterday, except instead of a heavily protected hypothetical second, they sent an overseas player that the Bulls fans are never going to know about, never going to see, and he's never going to come over to the NBA. So you have to send something. You can't send nothing and just get paid cash. That's against the rules of the CBA. So the hypothetical second and the overseas player are both just technicalities. The Bulls essentially made like close to $1.5 million after waiving the players for doing some paperwork.
Okay, so they saved some money. We made some money. I'm sure the Rockets fans are reacting with just as much outrage about the attempts for Houston to increase their profit margin.
I don't know. It seems like Bulls fans are the only ones that are concerned with Bulls money. And I'm going to have to do a podcast of my own here in the distant future about the rules of the CBA and how the cap works. Because people just think the Bulls are cheap and they won't spend money when cap and cash are very different. And it's just, I don't know. It gets frustrating because there's so much false opinions or ideas about what the Bulls are doing spread everywhere, and people just eat it up like it's ice cream cake, and it's just hard to get past.
Yeah. I mean, I understand the frustration, and there are a lot of negativity, and there's just when that's the cool in thing to do right now. I just rip them for everything, and I understand the frustration. I understand this year's been so awful, but I think big picture, you and I are definitely on the side that feels like, hey, there is really good things here in the core. We just got to figure out a way to make it happen. One thing I got to disagree with what a lot of people are saying. Let's take on, there's these awful 4-year deals that were signed in 2016, a couple terrible 5-year deals, and people want to automatically take on a 2-year deal, and just ruin our cap space in order to get a first round pick. I disagree with that. If we're talking about a pick that's in the 20s, I think you're better off signing a good player, guaranteed to be good player, like for a 1 or 2 year deal. Like, I'd rather reserve that space and get a guy in. I've been going on and on about Wes Matthews, like a player of that ilk, and pay a little bit more and take a little bit more cap room, then bring a guy in the 20s or 22nd at the end of the first round in a draft that's not supposed to be good, and bring in a player that's not going to help your young guys get better. What say you?
I will say there is a stance to that that I think you may be able to agree with, and that depends on the player that they would be taking back in return. As we saw in the Derrick Rose trade, obviously initially we really didn't want Rolo's contract. That contract is finally going to be coming off the books after this season, but Rolo has been a productive veteran for this team. So if you can trade Rolo or Jabari and get a solid veteran on just a horrible inflated contract that their team no longer wants, and you have to take him on for next year, and you get the first round pick, and you can kill two birds with one stone. Say you get an Evan Turner, who can play point guard but is the size of a small forward, or you get a solid big man that can contribute in a similar way that Rolo can to this team next year, then I think you consider it, because there is prospects like Kobe White, out of UNC, who's a point guard. He had 27 points, I believe 7 rebounds and 6 assists last night for UNC against Virginia Tech. He's a prospect that could be in the 20s. So if the Bulls were to get a wing and they want to sign a veteran point guard and then add somebody like Kobe White to the back end of their roster to develop behind Dunn and the veteran they acquire, I wouldn't have a problem with that. But it all comes down to the player that they would be taking back and if they can be productive or not.
That's good point. I would take a, let's say, Chandler Parsons deal on the books for the Memphis number one pick. That's going to be probably somewhere, could be a lottery pick, who knows? But it's probably going to be somewhere between 10 and 20. But if you're taking like a team that's challenging for a title and you're taking on a bad contract and you're getting 20 to 30 or 25 to 30, I don't think it's worth it. Those guys rarely make it. They rarely do. And or they really, if they make it, they're not going to be stars. They're going to be role players. Why not pay for the guaranteed role player? Because this team is sorely lacking there. That's my argument. Would you agree with my assessment there? Would you be more open to taking something in the teens as opposed to something in the 20s or 30s?
Yeah, but I'd also, my ideal situation for the Bulls with Rolo, Jabari, and maybe even Portis. Portis may be something that they can get a first for outright without taking on future cap. So if you can get the first that way for Portis, I don't think I have a problem with that. But ideally, with Robin or Jabari, for me, getting expiring salaries back in an extra second or two to then take those additional seconds acquired, because the Bulls have all their seconds past this year, as well as another one from the Grizzlies, and they have 2 pick swaps in the future as well. If you can add those seconds and then go into the offseason and dump Felicio's $16 million over 2 years to open up another $8 million in cap this year, so essentially you're doing one move to make another move. And you can then just have ultimately Zach LaVine and your rookie controlled contracts on your books before you add veterans. I think that's like a two-step move that would be very beneficial to the Bulls.
Good stuff. Keith, thanks for jumping on real quick to go over this move. Any other comments about the Cleveland game that you wanted to share with us? I thought there were some, one of the good things about that game was one of the few times I thought that I thought that Laurie and Levine all played well, especially Levine. And anytime you could see that, there's really only one other time this season I felt where in the Indiana game where they all played really well. Maybe at Washington was another game where I thought they all played pretty well. Anytime you could see that, that's something that you should feel good about.
Hey, they all shot over 50%. Chris Dunn was one assist short of a double-double. The only complaint I would have had was Lowry only taking 11 field goals, but he shot 5 out of 11. And Zach was extremely efficient. It's not like Zach chucked up 20 shots and made less than half of them. He was 9 of 16 field goal and 3 of 6 from 3-point for 25 points. So Zach had a very effective game. Would have liked to see Lowry get some more touches, but the touches he had were effective. And Chris Dunn shot over 50% while facilitating the ball. So regardless of the competition, hopefully they can take that confidence and ride it out.
Hi, this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of Chicago Bullseye. We have the great Keith Frantz on at Bull Scripted. How you doing, brother?
I've been better. I've also been worse, so we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, this is another embarrassing loss on this road trip from hell. I've witnessed a lot of West Coast road trips. This is right up there with arguably some of the worst performances I've seen. I tweeted earlier, I thought the game against the Lakers was Chris Dunn's worst game as a Bull, and I think tonight we witnessed Zach LaVine's worst game as a Bull. And, you know, they have those two back-to-back. And I don't know what to say. Bobby Portis has been awful the last two games. Yeah, I also tweet, I think he's playing down. Every game he plays, that contract's getting lower and lower for a big man. I think he's playing himself into an Ed Davis deal. I don't know. What say you? Let's start out with your initial impressions over this this road trip and tonight's game.
Obviously, the only positive game that you could say we had as a whole was Utah. Outside of that, you're picking and choosing, you know, select performances from individuals, and I guess the shot distribution being proper, if that counts for anything when you're not making shots.
Yeah, I thought there were some good moments in a Portland game too, you know, but for the most part, just a complete and utter collective disaster in some of these games, and I really don't know what the problem is. You know, it just seems like every night it's a different issue with a different player. I do know this. The decision to bench Parker was one of the dumbest. It's right up there with one of the dumbest things I've ever seen from a Bulls coach, because now he's playing. He's had three great games in a row. He's still on playing under 20 minutes a game, 19 minutes. He's averaging about a point a minute in the last three games. And to have a team as inept offensively, especially with their backup unit, for a two-week stretch, to have Portis out, and you're missing basically a backup power forward, and you're playing, you know, just playing ridiculous Shaq Harrison at the three. It's mind-boggling what the reasoning for that. And I don't care whatever reasoning it is, it's asinine.
Well, you know my stance on Jabari at the three. I do think he can play it situationally. But if you look at the timeline, Jabari was out from the time that we got healthy, then we had another injury. But he sat out as soon as he became trade eligible to the time that every other player in the league became trade eligible. After the clock struck midnight and Derek Favors became trade eligible and the Utah Jazz didn't want to deal with anything beneficial for the Bulls, I think they realized that they had to put Jabari Parker back out on the market, that they were no longer calling anybody's bluff, that the phone calls and the offers that they had received were just, you know, smoke. Nobody had any real interest. And as soon as that date hit and it was official, they're like, all right, we got 3 weeks. We have to get him out there and play and remind people what a great scorer he is. He might not ever be worth the $20 million that he's on this inflated contract, but it is expiring, and this is what he can bring to your team. So if you can dump cap on us and acquire that to go into the playoffs, you should give us something pretty nice, similar to Nikola Mirotic last year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think if he keeps on playing at this level, he's gonna play himself into a trade. It's just he's playing so well the last three games, and maybe you're right. So your argument is the reasoning that he was benched was due to the fact that they're trying to trade him. It wasn't just
because of his injury history and because of the optics of Jabari Parker leaving Chicago. If they were able to move him when he looked horrible here, and it would have been completely justified because he was out of shape and he had to play himself into shape, something that it clearly appears that he was able to do in the time that he got to play 30-plus minutes a night as a starter with our injuries. So now that that's happened, like I said, the window he sat out was when his contract, from when he signed, he became trade eligible to do when everybody else became trade eligible. So I think preserving him and trying to preserve the optics of trading one of Chicago's very own, while being able to kind of blame it on him as they kicked him out, if they could have still got the value on the known commodity that Jabari Parker is, that's what they were trying to do. Because now it is going to be a little bit of a weird breakup, because Jabari Parker is showing to be probably top two, top three players on our team at this exact stretch last few games.
I mean, I the more I watch him now, and I know there's some people probably going to roll their eyes, but I think he's very similar to Bobby Portis in that he's an offensive-minded power forward. Obviously, I think Parker has a little bit more three in him, and Bobby has a little bit more five in him. But they're very similar players. They're both good rebounders. I think Parker's a little bit better athlete and better shooter, and Portis is probably a better post-up game. But Portis scored tonight in just garbage time. He was awful for the vast majority of this game. He was awful for last game, 111 against the Lakers. And I think Jabari Parker is a better player than Bobby Portis. Offensively, I'll say it. I don't really think it's that close. I think he's far more athletic. Just in the open court, when Parker gets the ball and he pushes it, it's about probably one of the better offensive players that we have. And there's nothing that Portis has done in his career here that really says to me this guy should be being paid $12 to $15 million, which is, from what I hear, what he expects. And I'm all for either trading him or letting him walk. I don't know. What say you?
Situationally, Portis would be easier to trade because he is on a rookie contract still, and it's a restricted free agent contract. I do think that Jabari's versatility, because he can play 3 to 5. Obviously, you don't want him playing 3 or 5 consistently. You want him at the 4. The problem with the signing was always log jamming. It was the same thing that we did last year when we re-signed Nico. We log jammed. We didn't know exactly was our deepest position yet because we hadn't seen Lauri Markkanen take off. But we log-jammed our deepest position, the position that we just drafted our first-round pick in, and then we ended up moving one of those assets. So I think it comes down to who can you move and get the most for without hurting yourself. And the Bulls are going to have to leverage to the very last second because that's just how it works in the NBA. If I could pick, I would take Jabari for the same price, maybe because you front-loaded him this big contract, he'd be more willing to take less on a long-term deal if you're willing to commit to him going forward. I would have no problem with Jabari Parker as a sixth man on this team. I just feel that him and Portis fill the same role.
No, I agree 100%. So are you saying, though, first of all, everyone agrees, I think Jabari knows too, there's no way he's getting $20 million a year next year. I mean, that deal was done as a restricted free agent to get him off the Milwaukee roster. It was basically a one-year deal. But let's say he makes 10. Let's say he makes 8. Somewhere between 8 and 12, I think, is fair for what he brings. Or you have a choice of paying the same thing to Bobby Portis. Which one would you rather pay?
I paid Jabari Parker 10 times out of 10.
I agree.
That's not a question for me. The injuries are a concern. Obviously, you need to sit him down and have an Andrew Wiggins kind of like commitment conversation before you sign him to that contract. But his versatility is better than Portis. I think they both bring, at least from a raw production standpoint and the role that you want them to be in, because they do suck defensively. You want them taking advantage of the other team's lesser unit, or that team's lesser unit is going to take, you know, less advantage of you on the defensive end with their deficiencies. So then they can be a positive and they can be extremely effective, like we've seen from Jabari the last few games. But I take Jabari over Portis if it's the same money, and I would have no problem with Jabari getting 12, around 12 per. I think that's a solid investment.
What's your take on Zach LaVine's play over this trip? I know there's a lot of people down on him. I'm kind of, you know, I've always been in the middle on Zach. He's such a good guy, and there's a lot of things he does well. He's very poor defensively. You know, but I think it's kind of hard really to judge him right now. He just seems so frustrated, and it's just a really bad situation that he's in. What say you?
He's frustrated. We knew we were going to get our ass kicked on this road trip. The best game that we had a shot at legitimately was the Lakers, and we dropped the ball in that game. And the last two games, like you said earlier, Dunn probably had his worst game as a Bull, and Zach, at least while healthy, had his worst game as a Bull tonight. And some of it comes down to officiating. I think there is obviously some field goals that could have been given back to Zach at the free throw line that he's still not getting, and he still has to earn that respect. That's just the reality of the situation. We can complain about it as much as we want. We're starting a starting lineup that averages 22 years old or younger most nights, so we're not going to get the respect that a first, well, once first place seed in the West like the Nuggets gets.
No, that's true. Absolutely true. Unfortunately, that's the way it works in the NBA. Young players rarely get calls unless your name's Luka Doncic. I want to go a little bit into Dunn, who I've been I really like Chris Dunn. I think he's got a lot of talent. I think he's a fantastic defensive basketball player, but he's just so up and down on the offensive side of the ball. It's really frustrating. I guess, do you feel like, let's say, in the draft, if there's a point guard there, are you reticent to take that with the knowledge that, hey, you know, Dunn's our point guard, or do you feel like, hey, maybe Dunn's best suited as a backup?
My issue with the best point guard prospect in this draft in Ja Morant, he kind of reminds me a little of De'Aaron Fox. I mentioned to you off the air the one time that I see the tiniest, smallest little hint of Allen Iverson, and that gives me a nostalgia factor. But he's shooting 30% from three-point. He's a 70% free-throw shooter. He's averaging 5 turnovers a game at Murray State. He has a lot of the same flaws as Chris Dunn, but he's 20 years old, so he could grow into that. But is drafting a point guard that has the same concerns and has to be ball dominant to be effective next to Zach LaVine, who you're committed to long-term, where at least Dunn is defensively superior, and if he's off the ball, he generally can contribute to in a positive manner if Zach has to have the ball in a night that he's hot. If you draft a point guard like Ja Morant, you're just going to have conflict with Zach LaVine, and I don't know that doing that, overtaking a wing in this wing-heavy draft, is the way to go. You have to balance how much of an upgrade is Ja Morant over Dunn compared to how much of an upgrade are you going to get at the wing, and then you got to look at the difference between those and see which one is logically the better decision.
Speaking of wings, why don't we go a little bit into the free agents available at that wing position in this upcoming summer? I mean, that's where we clearly need to upgrade. People forget Valentine's out. I think Valentine will be either a starter or a backup next year at the three, probably more likely as a backup. Are there any threes that you like? Who's available, and who do you think are the best fits for the beloved?
Well, you know, we're definitely going to get KD, Kawhi, Butler, Klay Thompson, because we're just at the top of the pecking order when it comes to the free agents. But just in case they're a little preoccupied, you have Jeremy Lamb, Danny Green, J.J. Redick, if he doesn't re-sign with the Sixers, he is an unrestricted free agent, Terrence Ross, Wesley Matthews, KCP, Mario Hezonja, Jonathan Simmons, who was once with the Spurs, is now currently with the Magic, Wilson Chandler, Trevor Ariza, Rodney Hood, Bojan Bogdanovic, the LeBron killer in Indy. And then you have restricted free agents like Kelly Oubre, Stanley Johnson, and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, and Tobias Harrison that you could take a big swing at if you're kind of feeling risky with the cap.
Who do you like the best?
Well, I mean, I've obviously, you're going to like the free agents in the upper tier the most, I guess.
Just assuming we're not getting any of those guys, and I think that's likely with how bad this team is. You know, Klay Thompson or Durant or none of those guys are coming here. You know, is there a guy who's the most realistic player for us to potentially get that you like? Like a Wes Matthews, I like. I like him as an option, you know, on a reasonably priced contract. He's still playing at a high level.
I'll see you a Wes Matthews, and I'll raise you a Trevor Ariza, who we saw was willing to take an inflated contract to go to somebody like the Suns last year. And I think that's something similar to the Bulls are going to be looking at in free agency with a big cap number, probably trying to be short-term with win-now veterans like an Ariza that should, as long as he clicks with our culture like he didn't with the Suns, but he is doing with the Wizards. You know, if he can help jumpstart us, if he can't, he can be a trade asset like we saw. If not, you know, we remain flexible going forward to sign a star when we do make improvements and woo somebody.
Trevor Ariza. I love Trevor Ariza for the longest time, but he hasn't played well this year. And, you know, I think his time might be up. I don't know. I potentially, you know, we'll see. We'll see. That's not a bad call, though. If it's on a 1-year deal, I'd be totally open to that. Just a side note tonight, the Bulls against Denver, Bulls had a total of 4 fast break points. 4. With one of the youngest teams in the league, you know, I just want to say, really? I mean, Keith, is this insane or what? What he's doing? Are you as irritated with some of the stuff that he's doing as I am?
I'm not, because everybody's figuring everything out. We have our 11th starting lineup now. We haven't been healthy for even 10 games consistently as a unit. We were missing our best defensive player. And how many fast break opportunities were there tonight? They shot like 60-plus percent from three-point. But when I stopped counting, it was 17 out of 30. So how many fast break opportunities do we have? We weren't playing good enough defense to get any.
Yeah, good point. Definitely a good point. But yeah, regardless, he's clearly slowed it down, you know, overall. And I don't know. It just seems like to me this team, so young, so fast, should be running a lot more than they are. And
no, but a lot of that would come from better defense, which they were playing at one point, and they're not playing currently. And whether that's communication or just general pissed off about the situation, I don't know. But a lot of transition offense develops from good defense. You know, they kind of coincide.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And, you know, it's so hard not to be frustrated after a game like today. Big picture, I still think the future is bright for the team with, you know, Lowry and Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn and whoever their number one pick is going to be, Wendell Carter Jr. I mean, that's a very talented young team. You feel they're going to grow. I'm not at all certain that Boylan's the guy, though. And if he's not, is there any names that come to mind that you're a big fan of that are out there and available?
We've talked about Jerry Stackhouse before. Mm-hmm. Jalen Rose on ESPN brought up Juwan Howard and how Chicago loves their Chicago connections. I think a lot of that comes from the pride that we have as Chicago fans. You know, somebody from Chicago is going to want their name to have a good taste in people's mouth when it's in their city. So I think the Bulls try to play to that in their favor, and I think someone like Juwan Howard would be somebody to consider as well.
Let's talk about the lost episode and go over some of the draft prospects. Zion Williamson, is he your unequivocal number one? And if the Bulls have the number one overall, is that the guy you're taking?
Oh, man, that is one decision that probably could get Gar or Pax fired if they screw up.
No doubt.
And it's hard because you want to say pull a Danny Ainge and trade back and still get somebody that you really like and you know has, you know, in a similar ceiling, probably not as high. But I think if you have the number one, you just have to take Zion and figure out what you got going on.
So you take Zion.
That's how I feel today. A lot can change throughout the tournament, obviously.
And I think it's easy to fix that. Like if you get Zion, you know, to me he's a 4, no doubt about it. All you do is you have Wendell Carter Jr., Lowry, and Zion. There's 96 minutes available at the 48 at the power forward, 48 at the center. You basically divide those three equally, and each guy plays 32 minutes a game. You know, that's what you do. And you find the best, you know, fit. You know, sometimes Zion and Lowry, sometimes Zion and Wendell Carter, sometimes Lowry and Wendell Carter. You know, just figure it out from there and then run with that. I think it's the best thing you do, and you should draft them. But at 2, who are you liking it to?
I think you have to stick to best available. I think you'll have some conflicting issues with RJ and Zach LaVine. Obviously, people have their doubts in Zach LaVine. So if RJ proves to be better, you have Zach controlled and you can move him. So unless it's a situation like we talked about earlier with Ja Morant, where you feel his flaws are too similar to Chris Dunn's to waste your last year of tanking on somebody who might get you right back to where you are, I feel you have to stick to best available. That's just, you know, is what you got to do.
And for those who haven't seen a lot of RJ, give it a little bit 411 on his game. I thought he was a point guard. Are you saying he's not?
He can be a point forward. He's 6'7". He's got a 6'9", 6'10" wingspan. He's probably a combo wing player, but he could definitely play small forward in the NBA. He's not, you know, your prototypical 3-and-D player like Cam Reddish is, who's 6'8 with a 7'2 wingspan and projects to have around a 40% three-point at some point. He's struggling now as a third option at Duke, but he's pretty much supposed to be the more fluid, younger much more upside version of your favorite prospect ever, Mikal Bridges.
And is there anyone else that that you're really high on, that you really like, that in the draft? Let's talk a little bit about the guy from Murray State, the kid from Murray State, and give us a quick 411 on him. The thing I didn't like about him was his shooting percentages. Doesn't seem like he's a great shooter from three. Am I wrong in that assessment? And give a little 411 on that player.
No, you're not. As we covered a little bit earlier, he shoots 30% from three currently. He's a 70% free throw shooter.
What's his name again?
J-A Morant, Morant.
Okay.
So his free throw percentage is concerning. His three-point percentage is concerning. He does have good vision, but he is averaging five turnovers. But it is like a 2-to-1 assist-to-turnover ratio. He's averaging a near triple-double. He carries his team. Obviously, they play lesser competition in the conference that they're in. But hopefully they make the tournament and we can see him against some better competition and get a better assessment. But Gar Foreman was at the Eastern Illinois game tonight that Ja Morant was playing at.
What's his comp?
Some people have said De'Aaron Fox, who we've seen take off this year, who was my favorite prospect in the Lowry draft. I really didn't pay attention to Lowry. I focused the top five. But he's got a comp to Fox. Like I said, I can see a hint of Iverson. He's got a nasty streak to him. But the shot is concerning. And that's it's all it comes back to, is if you're moving on from Chris Dunn, that point guard better be able to shoot, and he better be a better fit with Zach LaVine.
Yeah, absolutely. And how is he on the defensive end?
He's a lesser defender than Dunn. He's 6'3". He's lengthy. He's still probably got to fill out. I don't think he probably weighs 180 soaking wet yet. But he's that wiry. Hey, don't give me that. You're Mikal Bridges' boy.
That's so true.
So he's got the wiry Mikal Bridges mantis strength at the point guard spot, but he is a lesser defender than Dunn, and that's the concern. Is he's younger, he has more upside, but if he has the same flaws, can you really just make the same mistake? I don't know.
How about Cam Reddish?
What's like your I said, him? He's pretty much, if you gave Mikal Bridges Popeye spinach before he hit, you know, his manhood, like, he's supposed to be the best 3-and-D prospect in this draft, and if you're going for fit, I think him or Nasir Little, who's kind of hidden at UNC behind an upperclassman. So I think those two are the most ideal fit for the Bulls. Jarrett Culver's a name, but he kind of falls into the combo forward shooting guard spot where you're a tweener, and I don't know that's what we need.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, Cam, though, can hit the three, right? That's supposed to be
yes.
A strong point.
That is supposed to be his bread and butter.
And he's been somewhat disappointing, correct me if I'm wrong, so far this year?
That is correct. He did have a game winner, and he stepped up with RJ when Zion got poked in the eyeball. Mm-hmm. He did hit a game winner for them that game. So maybe that'll spark some confidence. I believe he sat out the game following that with, I don't recall what the injury is, so I don't want to say what it was, but he sat out the next game. So,
why don't we go through the Bulls schedule to wrap this baby up next, and let's see if we got any potential wins in here. We got the Heat and Bulls on Saturday at 119-7, so that's two nights from now at Chicago. You know, not likely win, but it's winnable at home. Then they got the Cavs on Monday at noon. They got the Hawks and Bulls. That's another winnable one at home. Clippers at Bulls, and you know, tough team, but again, winnable. And then Cavs at Bulls again. So there's a couple winnable games in there. You know, I don't know about you if you feel this way. I don't want to win too much, but I like to see them get two or three, you know, soon, just to kind of get the stink of such a horrible recent schedule and just playing so badly. I mean, how many have they lost in a row now with tonight's loss? Seven?
In a row?
Eight? Yeah.
Nine in a row.
Yeah, right? And so, I mean, it looks like the Cavs, the Hawks, and the they play the Cavs again. Yeah, I mean, those are winnable games.
All the way up until the trade deadline, outside of the Pelicans, we have winnable games. I would obviously prefer to beat the Heat, be competitive against the Clippers, beat the Nets, beat the Heat again, right before the trade deadline and the All-Star break and all that fun stuff, because we don't want to shoot ourselves in the foot just having wins all year against the Hawks and the Cavs. Mm-hmm. We should drop one of those, but outside of those kinds of games, I do not care about wins, us getting wins, rather. I want as many wins as possible at this point. We're not going to hit 30. We're probably not going to hit 25. Just play to win and try to kick some ass.
All right, my man. Hey, thanks for joining the Chicago Bullseye. Always great to have you, Keith. Great stuff as usual. Looking forward to the chat again soon.